This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Female Health and Pregnancy channels. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming. For your convenience, simply at eHealth Radio. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Lisa Dugan, Ph.D., RN, FNP, and Assistant Professor of Women's Health and Obstetrics at Clemson University, and Mary Apple, CEO of Pretty Pushers, Incorporated, manufacturers of hospital gown alternatives for birth. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, good to have you both today. So, for starters, Dr. Dugan, many people would assume by the term postpartum depression that this is a disorder which begins after the baby is born. Is that always the case, or is this something a woman is predisposed to during pregnancy or even before?
Well, there are some risk factors that can predispose any woman to the pregnancy or postpartum mood disorder. The thing about it is that if a woman has a mood disorder prior to being pregnant, if she had depression or if she had anxiety, that can definitely predispose her to a postpartum mood disorder. Also, if she has any limited social support, and that could be caused by, if she's kind of limited geographically, if she doesn't have a lot of family in the area, that can also predispose her to having a postpartum mood disorder. Limited resources, whether that be finances or education, marital or partner conflict. And that could be due to, if this was an unanticipated pregnancy, or if there's some type of job changing, or if there was a conflict prior to the pregnancy. And stressful life situations that can also, whether that has to do with the added burden of a pregnancy or whether that has to do with something related to the finance situation. And then there's also pregnancy risk factors. If the mom's a first-time mom, that adds stress to the situation, and that can put her at risk. If it's a teen mom, that adds stress. And if there's any medical issues during the pregnancy, if the mom develops high blood pressure, diabetes, that adds stress to the pregnancy. If there's any kind of unanticipated complications at the delivery, we kind of term them traumatic deliveries, but it's anything that the mom wasn't expecting. Medical interventions like a C-section or if the NICU had to attend the delivery. So any of those aspects can actually add stress and put a mom at risk for postpartum depression. I think, all girls kind of have that vision of what their delivery kind of should be or what they want it to be. And when it doesn't go that way, we kind of go through that that grieving process. Now, thankfully, we just had the definition for postpartum depression revamped. And it's actually been recognized by the American Psychological Association. And so they actually recognize it now as a peripartum depression. So that means that it now is recognized as beginning throughout pregnancy. And so it actually not only is being recognized as starting at the beginning of pregnancy, but it includes panic disorder, it includes anxiety disorders. Research has long shown that women can develop depression early on, but now it's being recognized as part of the disorder. And sadly, one in eight women will develop postpartum depression. And although the statistics are high, about 50 to 80% of these women will go undetected. And, currently, there's no consistent screening programs. That's why we're kind of missing out on these women. We've got no consistent prevention programs or anything for these moms. And so we're kind of leaving them unprepared.
Are there precautions a woman can take to help prevent postpartum depression?
Well, Dr. Dugan just talked about birth trauma, and that kind of falls into this because some women encounter what we refer to as birth disappointment. I mean, that's sort of an overall term for it, but, you know, we have a picture painted in our minds of how our personal birth experience might go, and then, of course, almost always some kind of unexpected event takes place, but a lot of women can feel very defeated by that. And it might sound like a small step, but writing a birth plan, that is a first step you're taking in, like, gaining control in the unknown situation of birth. So the main point, I think, is that women do need to know that they do have choices, and they need to write those choices down. So everything from how long she'd like to labor at home, if possible, whether or not she'd prefer an epidural, how long before the baby's first bath, and so on, even down to what she wears in the hospital, which is, of course, where Pretty Pushers comes in, could perhaps actually have an effect on how in control the mother feels in the situation of birth, and hence afterwards.
And I think a part of exercising those choices is to actually be prepared for a range of circumstances that they can encounter. And that includes the unexpected, any type of unexpected medical interventions. And another thing that I see as being important is not just having the birth plan, but actually when they're doing prenatal education, doing those tours, is to actually have someone say, you know, go through that birth plan and say, what would you like? What do you want your choices to be? But also, if that doesn't happen, let me show you the what if. You know, these are the scenarios, or these are the instruments just in case. If there is an emergency, let me show you ahead of time so that, you know, we so want you to have, you know, follow your birth plan completely. But if there is an emergency, if something unexpected does happen, we want you to know ahead of time that this is what these things look like, or this is what this, you know, piece of equipment is, or if these two people walk in the door right at your delivery, this is what that means. And that is so important, because knowing ahead of time, that should be part of their education plan, because that helps to reduce anxiety. And that's so important in keeping that birth experience positive, because research has actually shown that, you know, if a woman has some level of control over their birth experience, and if they feel that they have, you know, satisfaction with their birth experience, or if they have, you know, they felt it was a positive experience, then they actually have higher postnatal functioning, which means, you know, that their the development and the severity of postpartum depression, it doesn't exist. I mean, they actually, the development of postpartum depression is less likely in women that are satisfied with their birth experience.
Some really helpful information on this topic so far. How can we recognize postnatal depression? Are there certain behaviors that family and friends should be aware of?
Oh, absolutely. I think one thing that's important to realize is that some, you know, when a woman is actually in, you know, in depression herself, a lot of times she may not see it around her. You know, when you're really inside of it, you can't, things just look bleak, and this comes from experience. I had postnatal depression with my first son, and I honestly just, I couldn't understand what was going on around me. So when you're in it, you really can't recognize it. Other people had to say something to me. And so it's so important for friends and family and support networks to actually be aware of these symptoms. The difference is that new moms, when they come home, they're tired, and you're not getting enough sleep. And so it's important to kind of look at the difference between the symptoms of postpartum depression and what every new mom kind of experiences just simply from being an exhausted new mom. One thing is that what we see is the symptoms of postpartum depression is that they're present every single day. And they're there pretty much every day for approximately 2 weeks. And one of the things is that they won't go away if the mom gets a good night's sleep. They won't go away if the mom, you know, gets taken out to lunch and gets away from the baby for a couple hours. So those are kind of important things to notice. But some of the most common symptoms is that she'll feel depressed. She won't have an interest in daily activities, and these could be things that she enjoyed beforehand, or maybe things that she would have talked about enjoying, like maybe taking care of the baby. Changes in appetite. Maybe she stopped eating, or maybe she's eating way more than she would have normally eaten. Sleep disturbances. You know, maybe she's sleeping all the time, or maybe she's not sleeping at all. Lack of energy or fatigue. Feelings of guilt. Oftentimes, moms will start to feel like they're a failure as a mother. They're not good enough to have a baby anymore. Difficulty concentrating, and not just, you know, I left the phone in the refrigerator type of concentrating. I think all new moms have that exhaustion where they are doing crazy things. Beyond that, did you ever do that, Mary? I did that.
Yes. You just got my mind rolling then of all the stupid things yes. I've done, yes.
I did. I could not find the telephone one day, and it was ringing, and I was in the kitchen, and I opened the refrigerator, and there was the phone. Anyway, so, you know, it's so different from that just excessive fatigue. So these symptoms are beyond that. And sadly, the three biggest triggers for postpartum depression are maternal fatigue, infant crying, and an unsupportive significant other. And two of the three are things that you come home with from a new baby. So it's so important to have a good network of people to help new moms.
Without a question, today we are with both Dr. Lisa Dugan, PhD, RN, FNP, and Assistant Professor of Women's Health and Obstetrics at Clemson University, and Mary Apple, CEO of Pretty Pushers Incorporated, manufacturers of hospital gown alternatives for birth, here on eHealth Radio's Female Health and Pregnancy Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Continuing forward, Dr. Dugan, are doctors screening for postpartum depression and other maternal mental disorders generally? And if so, when and how do they do this?
Well, here's the thing. It's recommended that screenings are done. It's recommended that they're done during pregnancy, and it's recommended that they're done postpartum. But you will find every variation you can think of depending on the state, the site, and the physician or the midwife. Sadly, there are no mandates except for a very few states. There is actually only three states that require it, mandatory screening, and that's New Jersey, Illinois, and West Virginia. They're the only ones that mandate screening. Otherwise, it's very variable as to who will do it and who won't. The government actually did a large review on screening tests because there are a ton of them, and they found that there are two screening tests that are pretty much kind of the gold standard for screening. One of them is the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale, or the EPDS, and it's kind of a misnomer because you can actually use the EPDS to screen during pregnancy. And the other one is called the two-question test. And it basically just says, over the past 2 weeks, have you ever felt down, depressed, or hopeless? And have you ever felt little interest or pleasure in doing things? So that's the two questions it asks. But these tests can be given printed on a piece of paper. The woman can fill them out privately, or they can be asked verbally. The EPDS actually has 10 questions. And basically a positive result is, of course, the two question, if those are yes, then that's a positive result. The EPDS actually has a scoring on it, but I believe it's 7 out of 10 questions. But basically with these tests, I think the biggest stigma to get over, I think there's been a lot of media we can probably name off. Every woman that's been on the media that's had something to do with postpartum depression from the news, there's been a big, I guess, negative image towards postpartum depression. We've tried really hard to change that. But it's that stigma is out there about mental illness and motherhood. So a lot of people, I believe, are kind of leery about screening for it in some areas. So the big thing is that we're trying to get screening as a part of a routine visit. And I know one push right now is to get screening in the pediatrician's office. And one reason for that is that, in all honesty, new moms actually go to the pediatrician more frequently than they do their obstetrician. When a mom delivers a baby, she goes to her OB at her six-week checkup, and then she doesn't see them again unless she has a problem until the next year. The pediatrician, she sees pretty much every couple of weeks to every couple of months for the child's first life, or first year of life. So they're trying to, through research, they're trying to get these screening tests into the pediatrician's office because they see those moms so much more frequently than anybody else does. And so we're hoping to get the screenings in those offices so that they can pick up on any of this early and, get those referral networks in place. But the biggest thing is getting the moms to know that a positive test doesn't indicate a bad mom or necessarily a mental illness. It just indicates a human mom, someone that may just need a extra hand or someone to talk to or maybe a break for a short period of time.
I think, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yes, I think that point that you just made is perfect. I mean, I just feel like it would be human nature for a mother, especially like you mentioned before, who might not even recognize that she's having these feelings, or maybe she does, but she doesn't know what to label it or what to think about it. And if she was kind of handed this test, I mean, since our school age years, we've been taught a test. Oh, God, back up against the wall. And, so suddenly it already has a negative connotation. So, yes, if she's scored positively, I guess, wouldn't her sort of human reaction be, oh, well, I better, make myself look like a happy, great new mom because are they going to call in Child Protection Services just because I said that, or whatever. So, I mean, is there sort of a general protocol for if she scores this certain number on a test? Is there a phone call made right there by the doctor, or is the doctor, telling the woman right then, well, this is what I recommend for you to do, and sort of send her on her way?
Usually there's no, even a positive score, a lot of times depending on what the response is, usually we'll actually go in there and sit with them and talk to them and talk about actually what's going on in the home. The only thing that is immediate referral is if there are any thoughts of suicide or any thoughts of harming the infant. Those are immediate referrals. That's no question. And that would be for anyone. If anyone had thoughts of harming himself or someone else, that's always a referral immediately. But a lot of times when I've had moms score positive, I'll actually go and sit and talk to them and ask them what's going on. Depending on the severity of it, it may be something that, I actually just can work out with them, and we can actually work out a plan together. And I can ask them, you know, what's going on at home? You know, do you have, can we do this? You know, is there a mother's morning out where you can get a couple of hours of sleep? Well, let's do that, and then I want you to come back next week and see me. You know, that type of thing. Sometimes it isn't something that, you know, that's to the level that they have to, you know, go somewhere. Sometimes it is, but it all depends on the case-by-case basis. Sometimes it's just something that we need to talk out together, and that's it. There aren't as many, let me just say the cases that have to be sent to the hospital are so rare. It's like one in every 1,500 people are sent for hospitalization and involve social service.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Lastly, many of us have had or have pregnant family members or friends. How can the average person be of support once the baby arrives?
Well, everyone knows a new mom somewhere. The worst thing, though, is that now in our age of social media, we've all gotten to where we check up on them through Facebook or Twitter or texting. We've gotten out of the habit of actually going to their house to check on them. And the sad thing is that these moms need real support. They need someone to come over and let them leave the house for a couple hours, or someone to come over and watch the baby so they can take a nap. That's what they need, an actual body and real support, someone to hug them. Just the other day I had a new mom and who was actually posted a status that said, I'm crying and it's 3 a.m. And before I could actually do anything about it, multiple people posted, oh, it's okay, I felt the same way, I felt the same way. And only one girl said, I am coming to your house. And that was exactly what needed to happen. We should never forget that.
Such valuable information and a great bit of conversation here around this topic. Certainly appreciate the both of you taking out time, sir, during a busy time of year in the holiday season to come out and share this valuable information. Mary, if you would tell our listeners where they can be in touch with you and also get more information on Pretty Pushers online, that would be great.
Okay. I mean, luckily now the conversation about growing about postpartum depression, it's more open. There's more and more resources as more people talk about it and it's becoming normalized. But instead of listing a whole bunch, I will list one of the main websites, which aren't on their website. There are many, many pages of resources. And that is Postpartum Support International. Their web address is actually postpartum.net. And there's links actually in English and Spanish. And I don't mean to forget the dads here either. There's actually a whole separate conversation we could have sometime about fathers who also experience these type of similar symptoms, postpartum depression. But there's a page for dads. There's websites, blogs, you know, Twitter conversations, treatment centers, and even information for healthcare professionals on how to deal with their patients and clients. And then there's also a hotline that Postpartum Support International has, which is 800-944-4773.
Well, ladies, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us here today on eHealth Radio, and thanks so much for this valuable information.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
You bet. We've been speaking with Dr. Lisa Dugan, Ph.D., RN, FNP, and Assistant Professor of Women's Health and Obstetrics at Clemson University, and also Mary Apple, CEO of Pretty Pushers Incorporated, manufacturers of hospital gown alternatives for birth. And once again, the websites of reference is postpartum.net as well as prettypushers.com. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Female Health and Pregnancy Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network, and we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit ehealthradionetwork.com.